I guarantee you will go up 2 full rating points if you hire this guy.
This guy must be hot.
This guy is total personality. He's electric.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM, and it's time for The Big Lead here. And the big one here, is there a sounder that I'm missing? I'm seeing some judgment. I thought that was the sounder. There's a lot of hype on that, Nicole.
Let's get to The Big Lead.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right, so that was an awesome intro, but apparently I blew it, as Nicole Thompson likes to remind me.
Yeah, I'm just helping you.
But that is okay. There's nothing I like more than having confidence shattered right before the opening of an hour. But that's okay. Now, let's get to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Bizarro World.
Well, that's kind of like local. We could just use Seattle for that, because I feel like there's a lot of Bizarro World in Seattle. That said, Seattle seems immune to its own bizarroness. It's like Teflon City. Seattle thrilled with its own bizarre antics. This time, maybe not so much, because they're going to face off in court with a former employee who's now suing, as you just heard at the top of the hour news, suing for discrimination. And Heather Bosch, Cairo 7's own reporter Heather Bosch, was speaking to the lead attorney of the former City of Seattle employee about this lawsuit, and she joins us now in studio.
Yeah, this is a little bit different because this particular former employee says he's being discriminated against because he is white. Now, Joshua Dimert, got to get the man's name right.
Just so you know, I purposely left that to you because I looked at that and I thought, Dimert?
We've established that we're off to a rough start this hour, people. So Joshua Dimert's attorney, Laura D'Agostino, puts much of the blame on this on the city's race and social justice initiative. Now, I looked at a description of that department on the city's website, and it describes it as a program that brings more diversity to government and organizations, and that it focuses on improving workplace culture and communication. But his attorney describes the program this way.
You are a person that identifies as white. All of the systems of injustices, genocide, and discrimination fall on you, that it's up to you to make amends for that.
She says, for instance, that when Dimert asked to take time off under the Family Medical Leave Act,
his supervisor was very adamant that he needed to resign, that he was being perpetuating white superiority by holding on to that job.
And the accusations get pretty serious here.
Whenever he would speak out about injustices or about discriminatory messaging, we found a series of emails of co-workers of his that said that they wanted to, quote, beat him bloody, and that he was no better than the Nazis who perpetuated mass genocide during World War II.
So some pretty hefty accusations there. Now, we did reach out to the city. The city's hands are a little bit tied here. The city attorney won't comment on ongoing litigation. We did get a statement back from Mayor Bruce Harrell's office that says he is proud of his lifelong efforts to advance opportunity, equity, and justice for all Seattle communities. And he points out there are no specific allegations against the mayor in this particular lawsuit.
Well, that's true. I mean, in the press release they issue, I didn't see anything specific about the mayor himself, and he's pretty new to the job. So this is more this is more an institutional practice in the city that's being challenged.
Yeah, that's what they're claiming, that there's this system that goes far beyond bias training and actually makes people, or at least this plaintiff, feel like he's the bad guy because he happens to be white. He can't get advanced in the system because he's white, and it was eventually forced out because he says of his color.
Yeah, and he said that he wanted to take advantage of, it looked like, the Family Leave Act there, and was discouraged from doing so.
Yeah, he had a medical issue and wanted to take time off, and his attorney says that his supervisor used the term white privilege. You should just give up this job because if you take time off under the Family Leave, Medical Leave Act, you're keeping a colored person from advancing. That's what they claim.
Okay. So if he stays in the job and maintains it by taking approved leave, then a person of color is being denied the advancement. But you know, it's a weird point of view because it's like, you know, just – if he's a good employee, then it should be fine. But they want that he's stuck, basically feels pressured. Is that how he quit? Did he feel pressured to quit or
that
or did
was
he get
when
fired?
He quit? Yes. Okay. He quit because he was forced out, according to his attorney. So there are a lot of layers here. And I asked her, you know, there are a lot of people who kind of feel like they're discriminated against at work. I mean, show me information. And that's when she said, well, we do have these emails. We do have this instance with a supervisor. And, you know, one of the things about the court system is it's supposed to sort this stuff out. There's a lot to sort out here.
I was going to ask if he got the email because you always – it's one thing if you say somebody said something. It's another thing if they then followed that up with an email saying, P.S., you know, here's the proof you needed that I was discriminated against.
And is that just a coworker who's using foul language against someone in their opinion, or is it really a systemic problem that needs to be closely evaluated?
All right. Well, Heather Bosch, thanks so much for the time. And I take it there's more clips that you'll be playing coming up.
Oh, yeah. And I want one more time, Joshua Dimert and his attorney, Laura D'Agostino. So we're back on the tracks, my friend.
Nicole tells me that I identified you as Cairo Sevens. And I do not believe her, for the record.
Because technically, it was Andrew that caught that.
We've worked forever together, so I knew it's Cairo Sevens.
No, I'm in radio, buddy.
Cairo. Now you've got me saying Cairo Seven. Cairo Newses.
Cairo News Radio.
Cairo News Radio's Heather Bosch. But they claim I said Cairo 7, so...
I might have heard that, but I didn't correct you.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been okay.
I completely distracted the audience instead.
I was setting a low bar for the show. Joe Biden's guest hosting tomorrow, so I wanted to make sure... Oof. No, just kidding. I just wanted to make sure that everything was good.
Thank you, my friend. More coffee for all.
That's right. I blame Nicole. There's just nothing
I'll
around.
Take it.
Shattered that confidence early, and then it just all piled on from there. Thanks so much. You know, but there is something funny here about the Seattle lawsuit. One, if they're doing this, it is against the law. We outlawed discrimination, and it doesn't matter if you're what color you are, what shade color you are. It doesn't matter if you identify as a different color. I love that too. The guy who identifies as white. Remember, Rachel, what was her name? Rachel Dolezal from Spokane. She was head of the NAACP there, and it turned out she was white, but she identified as black. And she was, I guess, a woman before her time now, because now she's like, I wonder, I'd be curious to do a follow-up with her. Kind of like the one-hit wonders of the 80s, you know, once in a while you have.
Oh, she's around. I believe she has an OnlyFans page or something like that. She was posing in lingerie. Oh.
Well, I didn't mean follow-up with her like that. I just meant, I wonder if she's still identifying in the same way or what
you
the scoop is there.
You didn't want to check out her.
No, not interested in the OnlyFans page. Thanks so much. But anyway, the employee here, if he's got this, it sounds like a very solid case because, again, Washington passed the anti-discrimination law, and the left has been upset about it since it passed. I think it was I-200. And it basically just – it institutes that we're supposed to be colorblind on these things. And one of the things that's kind of funny about this accusation here from the former employee when he's told he needs to if he takes family medical leave then it would exercise his white privilege. Well, first of all, that law was passed by the whole state. Is that anybody who takes advantage of the law is exercising a white privilege because the law itself is white privilege, or was it supposed to be for everyone or just some people? How does that work? And then it would deny a person of color an opportunity for promotion. Well, you know, one thing that's kind of cracked me up is the left seems to view people through the color code unless it applies negatively to their own hierarchy. And what I mean by that is in Washington State, who are the top two people that are talked about as in line for the governor's office, right? You know, they're both super pale. That's the hint. Super pale. You've got Dow Constantine and Bob Ferguson. The guys talked about most as in line to the governor's office, which is held by super pale Jay Inslee, who, by the way, is, you know, has held that office longer than anybody else. Now, is there some compelling reason? Did he offer some agenda item that he had missed? And is that why he ran and won again? No, it was basically, you know what? I can't think of another job that I can get. The president thing didn't work out so well. I really like having a position of power and authority and prestige. I'm gonna run for governor again. And he basically won off name ID, and because in this state they just hate Republicans, you know. Well, and then the Republicans nominated somebody from the northeast corner of Washington, relatively unknown, And so that was it. He didn't have tough competition. And even if he had, Democrats tend to win in the state. He could have stepped down. And based on this, the mentality of Seattle here, he should have stepped down and put somebody else in there. Just based on the fact that someone else with a different shade of skin should have that job. Not Ferguson, not Dow Constantine, somebody else. You know, so, you know, one, I think that would it would make sense from Inslee's perspective on most other things, you know, then he shouldn't have run. He should have stepped down. But from a sense of fairness, it is absurd if this guy from Seattle is being held back because he's doing a good job. He's identified as an excellent employee, and then he's being abused at work because he's white. And then he's in training where they're trying to get him to acknowledge his racism because – but not because of what he's done, but because what past white people have done, which, you know, again, makes no sense. I've got news for everybody. In the past, there's been some horrible white people, but there's also been horrible everybody. You know, there's no major culture. There's no color of skin that escapes man's inhumanity to man at some point. So – when he spoke up against an egregiously racist messaging at a required workshop, he alleges his coworkers labeled him a white supremacist and belligerent colleagues continually berated him about his race. You know, there's a habit, I think, among some on the left now where they want to shout white supremacy because somebody's disagreeing with them and disagreeing with what, you know, what they've defined. And it's a way of stopping debate rather than having the debate. You know, so if you create something that says, you know, institutional racism is undeniable here and anybody who says anything different is a white supremacist. Well, you're not trying to have that debate. You're trying to shut down the debate because by definition, anyone who disagrees with you now is a horrible white supremacist. Right. And then if you're running with that, then you're just stopping anybody from, you know, arguing with you, anybody from making their own case that that is not the case. And ironically, if they're doing all these things, they're judging this guy not by the not by the quality of his character, but by the color of his skin, which is against Washington law, and the city should be in trouble. You know, that said, the mayor is correct, I think, in that it doesn't necessarily reflect on him, but it might, right? Because the mayor doesn't have to wait until the court proceedings are on. The mayor could look into this and see if the city is actually if the city is discriminating against this white guy and others who may be in positions that don't want to speak out and don't want to rock the boat, don't want to cause waves because they fear for their jobs or they feel like they would be ostracized. You know, if they've got that kind of environment, then it is the mayor's job to step in, regardless of what's happening in court, and fix the problem. So, you know, the mayor can legitimately say, hey, this doesn't look like it's my problem right now, or that this person has a problem with me. But that doesn't mean that that there is not a problem for the mayor to solve here. And that's a part of it. All right. Next up in the big league.
The big lead, top national.
Donald Trump announced yesterday that he is planning a run for the presidency again.
In order to make America great and glorious again, I am tonight announcing my candidacy for President of the United States.
Now, a lot of networks didn't carry the announcement, and I think that's weird because, look, he was former president. He still maintains a significant popularity, and by not covering it, I think that they're showing their own agenda items against him. And so and by the way, it kind of feeds into the president's own line that there's fake news out there, that it's us against the world and all the rest. So you got to cover it one way or the other. It doesn't mean you have to like him, but you do have to cover him. Now, that said, when the president came out, he gave a very long speech. And I'm not sure all of that was as planned, but he gave a long speech, and it was even interrupted on Fox News, by the way. I mean, at some point they went to the Sean Hannity show, then Laura Ingraham was kind of talking. I think she was a guest on Sean or something. But both of them seemed distracted by how long the speech was taking to get to the point where he just says, I'm running for president. I'm sure that wasn't what his political advisors wanted, although it's tough to say because I don't know who his political advisors are anymore. It's probably the Mirror. But he says, you know, he finally gets to that point.
I think he got more subpoenas than any man in the history of our country.
He's talking about his son, Eric.
So unfair. Al Capone, you all heard of the great gangster? Al Capone got far less. Billy the Kid got almost none. Jesse James, no. Eric Trump got more subpoenas. He's a PhD in subpoenas. They come from Congress. And I appreciate the job you do and the abuse that you've taken. I really do.
So
he's just having a little conversation.
Yeah, he's doing a little ad lib stand-up routine there for the announcement in 2024. And, you know, again, this thing went on for about an hour. And so I can see where networks would drop out of it at a certain point, but I don't see how they don't cover it. I think, or at least, you know, break in like they would with any. I mean, let's face it. If this was anybody else, if this was somebody running of stature, if the situation were reversed, it was Joe Biden or Al Gore or insert name of a famous political figure, they would be doing that as a story. And so, you know, it's going to be a problem for them. That said, I'm sure Trump revels in it. Loves the fact that he wasn't covered because it'll give him a new fundraising tool and something else. But he's not the only one thinking about running either. Florida's governor was asked about Trump.
We just finished this election, okay? People just need to chill out a little bit on some of this stuff. I mean, seriously, we just ran an election. We have this Georgia runoff coming, which is very important for Republicans to win that Georgia runoff. I mean, I know around the country, Florida was kind of the biggest bright spot. It was not so bright in many other parts of the country. It was a substandard performance given the dynamics that are at play. So hopefully we'll be able to do that. But I think what people like me who've been given the opportunity to continue is, okay, let's do something with that. And the reason why we won historic victory is at the end of the day, we led, we delivered, and we had your back when you needed us. That is why we won big.
It's always funny to me how politicians can say things like that. And he did win big. I mean, Florida went from barely electing Republicans in a year that was much more favorable to Democrats, let's face it, to a state that elected them by 20 points. You know, I mean, this was a slam dunk for both he and Rubio in Florida. And, you know, it should have put the final nail in Charlie Crist's coffin for sure. But, you know, he makes that announcement. It just makes me laugh because that close there, he doesn't name the policies that people are excited about. It's just kind of the platitude thing. And that's what works, you know, for politics. But it's always stood out to me as a strange thing because as an outsider looking in, you're like, wait, what? What was it that was a big deal? I don't understand. But that's the way it works. Now, Trump's speech was also criticized as low energy. There's a number of people, you know, and you expect the criticism from, you know, the Joy Behars of the world.
He looked like he was about to fall asleep.
All right. So, you know, and that's how most of us feel about The View in general. But I will say, I was not alone noting that there was a low energy there. That Trump was kind of like, I'm making this announcement. It's not my most exciting day. I figure this is something I have to do, but, you know, could have better things to do.
I thought it was purposeful. I think he wants to change the tone of his race. And I don't know. I don't know if he can handle that kind of change, but we'll see.
Yeah. Nicole's theory that it was on purpose. I tend to think he was just bored. And he enjoyed parts of it, but not other parts because he doesn't like the teleprompter, big speech. He wants more of the, you know, I just want to wing it. I'm with the people kind of thing.
Even his base, though, I saw all sorts of, I wanted more.
Yeah.
I wanted more Trump. I wanted more.
Now, they wanted. Now, I will say the funniest tweet I saw on it, and I have to give credit where credit is due, is Obama's former advisor, Dan Pfeiffer. I don't know if you saw that when he said, it just made me laugh. It's like it's a good line. You have to hand it to him whether you love Trump or not. This speech is Trump's message delivered with Jeb Bush's energy and Ted Cruz's charisma. Oh, man. What made me laugh?
That is your big lead.
Yes, and that is the big lead.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
We'll be right back.
David Bowe is in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. We were talking about the city of Seattle earlier. I think we used it as a bizarro world on the big lead. And that was for a discrimination case where a white employee was suing the city for discrimination because he was, in part, because he was told he had to accept his collective guilt for racism, not because he'd done anything wrong, but because white people had in the past and he needed to kind of embrace that. And, you know, that's bizarre enough. But even more bizarre is a lack of participation, a lack of cooperation with police when it comes to people who might be seeking to harm students. And Jason Rance of KTTH is here in the studio with us. He's got a story with, you know, he got some body cam footage showing a principal at a Seattle school not being overly helpful to police.
Shall we say, the opposite.
After an incident with a student. And then this individual, because of that lack of assistance, this individual goes on to harm a couple of other people, and the police are not happy about it.
No, the police are not happy about it. I've spoken to a number of officers who basically tell me that this kind of thing has been happening more and more often. In this case, it was an issue that happened back in June, and we covered it at the time. A suspect by the name of Liban Harassam allegedly broke onto the campus, went into a portable where students were, assaulted a young girl, stole a backpack, and then was allowed to flee. Now, officers got there, did not get told at all that this was an incident that the school was put on a lockdown. They were not told specifically about the assault. All the officer thought was happening was he was dealing with someone who maybe was going through something like a mental crisis.
I need to talk to you for a second. Huh? I'm not talking to you. Okay. Well, you're trespassing right now, so I need to talk to you.
What do you need to talk about?
Well, you need any assistance with anything?
Not really.
Okay, so what's going on?
Somebody's doing a hostage situation.
Doing a hostage situation?
Yeah, they're kidnapping kids over here.
Union 33, and what the subject is, a 220.
Any idea what a 220 might be? Yeah, someone dealing with a mental health issue. And so he goes up to some staff members, this officer, along with the principal at the time, Rick Bailey Case.
I just walked in.
Okay, did he say or do anything?
He entered a classroom, said he wanted to talk to a student, and he said he wanted to take a student again. And
like, did he try to
take
a student?
No, I don't think he was in the right mindset.
He wants to walk, let him walk right now.
Yeah. And he grabbed a student backpack.
Just make sure he doesn't. Does he have that student's property
yes.
anymore?
Yes. Unless he dropped it right there. I can't tell.
All right. Where's the student?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't know. So this guy, to me, was just coming off as a jerk the entire time. But the reason why the officer is asking these questions is he has to establish that a crime had occurred that would allow them probable cause to detain and potentially arrest. And so, as you heard there, he let the guy go. You can't really detain. But then he got that crucial information, which was, oh, hey, he stole the property of a child,
right?
Which is
and
a crime.
Wanted to take a child.
And wanted to take a child.
But what age are we talking about with the kids here?
It's an elementary school. Yeah. It's Sandpoint Elementary. So these are little children.
But also, it doesn't give you a lot of confidence in your principal if right after a traumatizing event, you know, where a little girl's had her, even if just her backpack was taken, or some guy walks in and says, I want to take the kid, that you don't know where the kid is.
Exactly. And here's where it gets really, really bad. So now that probable cause was potentially established, he ends up radioing into his dispatcher some additional information. And as he tried to further establish that, yes, a crime actually occurred and we have a victim, didn't get much cooperation.
33, he's running northbound. He's a possible suspect in a backpack theft. Can't verify that yet. So he's got the backpack. Where's the student?
The student's inside the portable.
Okay, can we check with the student, see if there's anything missing? Because if I have to put hands on this guy, it's going to go south.
I don't mean to tell you what to do at all. We're good. Like,
all right.
If you leave, we're good.
All right.
I'll replace this stuff on my own.
All right.
Thank you.
Union 33. Principal says he has the backpack. He's now declining to talk to me.
So thus, they couldn't just go ahead and arrest this guy, who allegedly then assaulted a DHL driver, got onto a bus, and when he was going through with the arrest, he injured a police officer who, at the time, they believed it was either a broken or a what's not quite the broken,
fractured,
but the fracture, something,
yeah.
something with
sprained.
The arm, sprained, something with the arm. So they end up making the arrest. He ends up getting charged. He's currently going through mental competency hearings. The next we don't have a next court date. There was one that was continued earlier this week. But what I loved about this body cam footage, the cop goes back to talk to the principal, who was kind of being a jerk still.
Yeah.
Hi. I can't wait because we have an injured officer. So just let you know we're being audio recorded.
So he didn't want to initially even have a conversation. Then the officer explains what was going down.
So we're still being audio recorded. See, the reason I needed your information was he committed a crime.
Yeah.
But when you walked off, mm-hmm. we had no crime, so I couldn't legally do anything. Mm-hmm. Then he tried to assault and rob a DHL driver. Then he went on a Metro bus and assaulted a bus driver. Mm-hmm. That's why I needed to get your information.
So I've got a lot of this available at ktth.com.
So the translation basically is when you hear this guy's voice trail off, he's on the video, the principal's just like, you know, done. You know, and I know that within that period of time he did realize where the student was, still on the portable, which he knew when he said he didn't know where the student was.
Yeah, there was also
– there's no way he didn't know.
Yeah, I mean he didn't know the exact location at that very moment.
Which dash he's in or whatever.
But something tells me that if you're aware – and how much of what happened that was he aware? I don't know. We reached out to him multiple times. He has not responded. He no longer is the principal at this school. I'm told by a member of the school that he went to a different country to take an education job. Seattle Public Schools won't provide any information on what happened or where this guy went.
I wonder how much he was making. Did we look that up?
I didn't look it up. He was new to this particular position, so I don't know if the database was as up to date. But this is concerning for a number of reasons. First of all, of course, public safety for these students. Number two, officers, again, are telling me they're getting this kind of resistance from staff at Seattle Public Schools. And I talked yesterday to Mike Solon, who is the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, and he's saying he's hearing the exact same thing from his members. And I mean, keep in mind, they're calling 911 for police assistance, but they only want to provide the bare minimum, I think, because of this aversion, an ideological position that they have towards putting people in the criminal justice system because it's racist and it's a white supremacy, blah, 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 blah.
They want the police protection, but they don't want the police action. So in other words, they're calling – and that's what I was wondering, if it was an ideological thing where
– I think it is.
That's what I suspect too. I mean, obviously you'd have to do – I mean it's a pretty good guess probably, because what other plausible reason is there, right? They're worried about things, and then when they realize they're not in any imminent danger, then they're willing to let things slide even though other people might get hurt. People forget about that part.
Well, again, and in this case, a student was assaulted. He has been charged with that. And it's just remarkable that there was no sense from the principal in this video to me that this guy could continue to be a danger.
Right. And come back. Right?
Yeah. He's off campus. And you know what? I knew we're all good.
Done.
We're good to go, officer.
I mean, I'm just picturing if it was my kid and the principal said, no big deal. I'd be like, no, hold on. It's a very big deal to me. And, you know, first of all, the fact that he can just jump the fence and walk into the portable is a bit disturbing. Secondly, that the principal is willing to just go, you know, we're going to let this one slide. Despite the trauma that's endured, you want to make sure that the people are punished for such things. Or, you know, in this case, maybe it's not drugs, maybe it's mental health, or maybe it's mental health because of drugs.
Well, he acknowledges, things, according to court documents, he acknowledges he's a drug user, meth,
shocking,
fentanyl, and marijuana. And I read some of the court documents from the doctor who was overseeing this and said he probably does suffer from something. They don't know exactly what.
Yeah.
And that's why they're trying to get him competent enough to be able to stand trial. The original case was dismissed by a judge. That was the misdemeanor case. Cops ended up finally getting more information, enough to charge him with felonies, and that's what he's going through now.
I'm also mad that this has even gotten to this point because, you know, I mean, you've done a lot of work on this, Jason, where you drive around the city and you just see decay after decay after decay. Tacoma, 6 months ago, Tacoma looked like it was avoiding Seattle, but mm-hmm. there were little pockets where you're like, okay, this is trouble brewing here. And now it's looking increasingly like Seattle, where, you know, you've got
it's some, Seattle light. Yeah. I think it's there.
Well, it's moving into Seattle like hardcore because yeah. you got public encampments spreading everywhere along the highways and others. And once they're public and out in the open, it's like game on. You know, everybody's ready for it. So
I hope everyone will check out the video. There's a lot. I've got at least 15 minutes up over at mynorthwest.com. Look at the guy's body language. You get the arrest as well.
One quick question for you before you go. How long did it take you to get the body cam footage once
since,
you asked for
since
it?
June 2nd.
That's what I wanted.
I broke the story initially specifically with this because I heard about it, and they withheld this until last Friday.
The public's right to know.
Yeah, unreal.
Just took a little time. Check it out at KTTH at mynorthwest.com. Scroll down for Jason Rance's show and check it out. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe's in for Doria Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. And it's time for Awesome Audio.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio. Clips a day.
Let's start with the harsh topic. AOC says abortion is a class issue.
That abortion is an economic issue. Forcing poor and working class people to give birth against their will, against their consent, against their ability to provide for themselves or a child is a profound economic issue. And it's certainly a way to keep a workforce basically conscripted to large scale employers and to employers to work more against their will, to take second and third jobs against their desire and their own autonomy. And so the idea that that abortion and access to abortion is somehow not a profound and central economic and class issue and class struggle is certainly something that I think a person who's never had to contend with the ability to carry a child, it belies that perspective.
She's speaking kind of like, there's Marxist ideologues tend to view everything into a certain lens. And she's got that kind of cadence to her voice there where she's trying to lecture you like there's a college class going on in terms of, you know, this is the class lens. You know, the people have spoken. First of all, contraception has been cheaper over years. It's been more abundant and given out more readily than ever before. The abortion rates – well, first – and childbirth rates are very high. I shouldn't say very high because all over the world they're diminishing. But I think if you took a look at the birth rates among poor versus rich people, poor people tend to have more kids. And it's not because I bet you if you walked up and said, were you forced to? People don't say, yeah, well, you know what? That's what happened here. People had more kids because they like kids, right? And there are plenty of wealthy people who wait, and some of them wait too long to have kids. Some of them have other ambitions in life, but that's what happens. So, you know, again, this is not it might disproportionately be in certain classes, but this is not a class issue. This is not Marxism 101 here. It's a little more complicated than that. There's a human issue here. Now, let's lighten things up with Shaq, who is teaching us that there might be more in the sky than we've been led to believe.
I have a new theory. There's more than one moon.
Oh, no. Oh.
Just let me tell you my theory. The other day I was riding past Auburn, as a matter of fact, and the moon was on the left. And I'm keep right. going straight, then making the turns, and about 20 minutes later, the moon was behind me.
That's because it was moving, fool.
There's more than one moon. And then another 45 seconds, the moon was on my right. It's more than one moon.
You know what we should do?
I actually like that theory of Shaq's. Because,
I like it.
Yeah. It's like, you know what? I'm not fooled. I told my kids when we were driving the other day, they saw the moon, and it was kind of keeping pace with us in the car. They're like, Dad, the moon's following us. I was like, well, you know, did you say goodnight to the moon yet today? Because like the story says, it likes to have you say goodnight. Now it wants to know what you're up to. All right. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Have a great night.
what that means, to play us out? What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, go.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.